Happy Tuesday. It's good to see you. I'm stalling because Ken and I forgot to pick out a song, so I'm stalling while Ken picks out a song, and then we'll play a song. See where he's rolling through the songs now. We'll see where he ends. Ooh, I like Josh Groban. He's cute. What do you got there?
So it's a Christmas album, apparently.
Oh, it's a Christmas album.
That's okay.
Little drummer boy.
What's thankful?
We'll find out.
It might be a Christmas song, but here's Josh Groban singing Thankful.
so much to be thankful for.
That was perfect. That was perfect. All right. So, yeah, I never heard that one before either. And, you know, here was hidden on Ken's computer. We accidentally found it.
Josh Groban mixed in with Christmas songs.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you. Thank you very much. That was gorgeous. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to Gentle Healing. Let's see. Week 36. We are in week 36 now. So, as you all know, you get to start things off by sharing from the last week. As a reminder, in the last week, we looked at lessons 229 to 235, and we read chapter 1, From the Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, in any of the versions that you might have available, including the online version, the black cover book, and the green cover book. And also you're able to share from your journals, from your contemplation, from your experience, anything related to gentle healing. So, who would like to get us started? Let me move this just a little bit. I can't see the screen. There we go. All right, Kathy, thank you very much. The mic is yours.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to share that for me, the most direct means to eternal bliss reading was, gosh, I don't even really know how to describe it. I loved it, actually. It's not the first time I've read it, or the second time, or the third time, or the fourth time. I've read it several times. But somehow each time I read it, even though it's written in the simplest of language, I so appreciate that, and I so feel grateful for what feels like to me a teaching that cannot be misunderstood. And one of many that impacted me was number 88, your true self deserves your attention. And I remember, you know, the first time I read it, just a couple, 3 days ago, you know, stopping with that particular one and, you know, really giving that some attention. You know, your true self deserves your attention. It talks about, you know, the true self being the background of awareness. And, you know, when something's a background, it's almost like, you know, he's pointing out we don't notice it because our attention is always focused outward. And it almost felt like, wow, my true self deserves my attention. It's like, I don't know, it almost felt like such a tender idea to turn my attention towards that attention. It's like, you know, who amongst us does not in some way appreciate attention in the most positive of ways, you know, where you're affirming your goodness, affirming the truth of yourself, affirming your godliness, affirming your holiness, affirming your inheritance, affirming your treasures, you know, affirming where every answer lies. And to think that I have to be instructed in simple language such as number 88 that says your true self deserves your attention. Deserves it. You know, and it's almost that question comes to me, is that where your attention is? Are you, you know, finding other things to be deserving of your attention? And any time that it's an external focus and my mind is strayed from, say, it's a distraction. I'll just use that. It becomes a distraction. It's like that happens so quickly, and it's like this constant vigilance to return my attention to this deserving self, which is in the background constantly. But it's, you know, unfamiliar because the attention has been trained from the get-go to look outward, you know, trained through thought, language. Language is just an added something to the attention that was before that. I mean, it speaks about the infant and, you know, learning its native language. You know, thoughts are the words of your language. Whether you have one or two languages, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, the words of that language. And we learn that. We learn that. That is in addition to this background of awareness. And once that, you know, that I thought arises, ego is the I thought or the thought of I, once that arises, everything that follows is fluff. It's not even real. And so the ego is constantly striving to convince us that it is a real entity, a real thing. You know, turn to me. And so much of that attention, which it says, I deserve, you know, anytime we find ourselves saying, I, what I? The fluff, what was added after, and can that be real? Can that be real? So, you know, this idea that this true self deserves your attention, look that way. And all of our, Regina had a series of, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 12 minute videos. I believe it was yesterday that I listened to. And, you know, Rupert Spira talked about the background of awareness, the exact same words that we see in Michael Langford's book, and that's our self, that's our true self. But because the eyes are focused out in the foreground, that background is still there. It is life itself. And, you know, we're focused on the coming and the going, the finite, what passes. And we wonder, you know, I wonder why there doesn't seem to be any sensibility or stability in that. How could there be? How could there be? And one of the things that I was reading in Experience Your Perfect Soul on Sunday during my time, I was reading from Catherine Piedrick, and she was sharing that, you know, the mystics call it the supersensible kingdom. The supersensible kingdom, and why we don't give that any of our attention. And Jacqueline was just reading earlier from NTI Acts, and it spoke to that as well. You know, why do we give that that external world that makes no sense and is clearly where all the chaos resides, why do we focus so intently on that with our attention? And as we do that, we distract ourselves from attending to attention itself, that is unaffected by, you know, the chaos and the madness and all of that. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, just all of it, all of this so ties in beautifully for me and feels particularly, I don't know, meaningful, at least the direct means piece of it in relation to everything else. So I'm going to give up the mic. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. I really, really enjoyed your passion. Lynn has written, my true self deserves my attention, with love. So thank you, Kathy, for sharing that. Is there someone else who would like to share? You?
Me?
Well, you're looking at me. I didn't know if looking at me was like putting your hand up. Okay, go ahead, Ken.
Okay. This week, driving with Rebecca, my wife, was asking her where she would like to eat. And she says, I don't care. Well, this goes back a long way in our relationship of she really does care. Because the first time she said that to me, we were driving through Illinois. And so I start to pull into a gas station. They pull into the little mart at the gas station and pick up two hot dogs, two hamburgers, what out of their fast food section. She goes, I don't want to eat here. And I go, you don't care. Well, not here. So she said that again coming home, and I go, okay, we know that isn't true. What do you really mean? And it turns out that what she really meant to say was, I don't know what I want to eat. Which then made sense, because all through the years, it would be then, come up with suggestions. So I would go through, well, we can go to Brandon's and have nachos. We can go to Alberto's and have, or we can go to
another Mexican place.
Well, Mexican, yeah, it happens to be my favorite. But what it turned out to be is my mind very quickly runs through each of the flavors of a meal. And goes, yeah, I feel like that tonight. Oh, pancakes, nope, don't feel like that tonight. Oh, chicken, nope, don't feel like that tonight. Her mind can't. Until I put the idea into her head, she can't say, yes, that sounds good. So we got into this talk about what is truth. Well, to her, truth was, it doesn't matter. Well, that really wasn't truth, but that's how she said it. And we got into this thing about how we are taught to lie. And she had watched her grandchildren be told by their mothers or by their mother, well, don't say that. Don't say this. It's not polite or what. And it turns into we are taught to lie. To everybody else, to ourselves. And what we're doing in this purification process is learning to not lie to ourselves. And the importance of self-honesty. And how it's we're having to retrain ourselves to be honest. Mm-hmm. Because I know in my life, being honest has always come at a very dear price. To tell somebody, you know, this kind of goes with the guys. The wife comes out and goes, how do I look in this outfit? And I had an agreement with both Rebecca and my former wife that I would tell them exactly. Well, my former wife's mother was aghast that I told her she didn't look good in an outfit. How come? What do you mean? Well, her father had figured out to tell his wife that she looked good in everything because then she'd buy it and they could move on. So she wasn't ready for me to be honest and say, I don't like it. Yeah, smart man. Thanks, Jacqueline. But the whole thing about our honesty, because that was it in what? Purification and everything else when we first started MPP. Be brutally self-honest. And it sounds easy, but it really is one of the hardest things to do is being honest. And so much of these lessons we're going through is, especially self-inquiry, if you're not going to be honest, don't even bother. You're not going to get anywhere. If you can't be honest with yourself, waste of time. So a very funny little experience to reemphasize that honesty thing.
All right. Thank you very much for sharing, Ken. And of course, we saw Michael Langford was sharing with us that, of course, our desire for liberation is our most important quality, but the second most important quality is self-honesty.
Yes.
Right? So thank you. All right, Lori, the mic is yours.
Hi there, everyone. I got a bit of a cold, so I may have to cut it really short. But I just wanted to say that I was doing the videos recently of the self-awareness that was from a link from Lesson 234, I think. The one from, is it Douglas Harding and Greg Good and those? And I found them so powerful. And it was about a year ago that I was doing the Harding, the Headless Way. I did a workshop on it. I was getting emails, and I was like, I don't get this. I don't get it. And then when I did it recently, it's like, oh my God, I get it. And it was just such a joy to finally feel the effortlessness of it, because I've been really having resistance around the awareness watching, awareness meditations. It feels so much like effort to me. It's like, it's effort. There's something not right here, but today, after watching these videos, I guess it just, they explained it in such a way that something clicked. So I really appreciate those. Thanks so much, and I'm letting go of the mic.
Yeah, thank you, Lori. I'm glad that you found those little videos helpful. I enjoyed spending time with them yesterday. Does anyone else want to share from this week? All right, well, if somebody changes their mind and decides they want to share, just put up your hand. What I will do, since no one is putting up their hand right now, is I'll go ahead and begin my sharing. And I will begin with the review from the Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, Chapter 1. So, Kathy, here comes your 8th or 9th or 10th or whatever time through it. I also, just to let you guys know, I chose to read the green cover. So if you read a different version, this could be slightly different. I've never sat down and done a comparison, but I know that he made changes with each version. But I never sat down and figured out what are the differences. I just read different ones at different times. So, as I think it was Kathy that mentioned, he points out to us, and of course we knew this, but it's still good to hear it again. He points out to us that the ego is the thought I. And he gives some examples like, I am happy. I am sad. I did this. I did that. And, one thing that I did as reading this is I allowed myself to feel, and I'll be honest, the two that I could feel the most were I did this and I did that, I am happy, I am sad, were just sentences to me. But I could feel I did this, I did that. And that allowed me to really get in touch with that feeling of ego, right? That feeling of I, that feeling of distinct me, that feeling of, this is what I am. And he points out, of course, that there are so many sentences in thought that contain the word I. And I don't know if you all remember, but last week when I was reading to you from Gina Lake's book, In the World and Not of It, we read some different types of thinking that you will find in the ego thought system. And the very first one, these are what she calls thoughts that uphold the false self. The very first one was thoughts pertaining to I. including thoughts about other people in relation to you. So, you know, her very first tip was really the same as what Michael was putting out here, that all of that I thinking is really ego thinking. And as we allow ourselves, in fact, there's one line in here where he talks about not tolerating this I thinking. And that sounds pretty strong, maybe, to not tolerate it. But if you are a student of A Course in Miracles, you know that there's a famous line in the Course where Jesus says, listen very carefully to these words, you are far too tolerant of mind wandering. Isn't you are far too tolerant really trying to say don't tolerate it anymore, right? So this isn't the first time that we have heard this. If you're a Course student, this isn't the first time that we have heard this. It's just as Kathy pointed out, Michael's language is so simple and so direct, right? You're far too tolerant of mind wandering, although, you know, although Jesus does a really good job of talking, there's a softness to that. You can kind of miss the point. Don't tolerate it has no softness. And again, it's the first thing that we saw in Gina's book last week, that the way we uphold the ego is by listening to that I thinking. And of course, I thinking is the biggest thing that the mind does. So I would love to say, you know, okay, so starting right now, I'm never going to do that again. But it's just not going to work. I wish it would, but it doesn't. So what we need to be willing to do is be committed whenever we catch ourselves in I thinking. First of all, be willing to catch ourselves in I thinking. And then whenever we catch ourselves in I thinking, we need to be willing to shift to, and my recommendation, since we're doing the course right now, would be the course lesson of the day. So instead of I thinking today, we would think God, and of course there's an I in the sentence, but you can't avoid it. God in His mercy wills that I be saved. And maybe open up the course again, read the lesson again, maybe open up Regina's tip, read that. Maybe you did your own contemplation, read that. But refocus the mind on a contemplation rather than I thinking, right? And that helps to break the habit of the I thinking. Now, one thing that Michael said in this book is that everything that a human perceives is actually part of the ego illusion. But for the purposes of this book, we're going to focus on the ego as thought. And I think that's really smart. You know, it kind of reminds me of my 12th grade English teacher saying, narrow your topic. You know, you can't cover everything. Narrow your topic. So we are narrowing our topic to where we are really only focusing on letting go of our thinking, letting go of thought, letting go of ego thinking. That gives us one thing to really focus on. And then everything else, we practice the loving all method with, right? We let it be as it is. We love it as it is. But what we're focusing on letting go of, what we're focusing on removing our attention from is the I thinking, I thoughts. Michael also defines the self with a capital S as infinite, eternal, awareness, love, bliss. And he points out that the awareness, love, bliss part of that five-part description, they are not three, they are one. And for some reason, bliss is a word that just never really connects with me that much. But happiness does. Happiness is something I understand. Happiness is something that's very genuine, very clean, very clear. So when I look at the word bliss, I see it as happiness. And I can see that awareness, love, happiness, are not three, they are one. In fact, I remember saying recently somewhere, maybe it was during a gentle healing group, I don't remember, but I said, for me, love and happiness are no longer two things, they're the same thing. And that's a true statement. So whether I'm practicing the loving all method or whether I'm practicing the unconditional happiness of the untethered soul, chapter 15, to me it's the same. Because love and happiness are the same. Unhappiness and judgment. Or unhappiness and rejection. Because judgment always has rejection in it. They are the same. Acceptance, allowance, happiness, love, these things are synonymous, right? They are all the same thing. And awareness. Awareness is that openness. Awareness is allowing by its nature. In fact, it can't do anything but be allowing, right? So that means awareness is also love bliss, right? Awareness is love happiness. It's not judgment, it's openness. It's not rejection, it's allowing, right? So awareness, love, bliss are not three, they are one. And that to me is very, very clear. He says the self is the background of awareness, as Kathy pointed out. But because almost all humans are in the habit of looking outward, it appears as though the background of awareness wakes up in the morning and goes to sleep at night. I don't know if any of you guys heard my I Am That teaching last night. It was the first time that I was teaching on a Monday night. And in fact, the teaching will be posted today, so the audio will come out tomorrow. Because last night we had technical difficulties.
The post is there.
The post is there already,
it
yes.
It just didn't go out on the update.
So it'll come out on the daily update tomorrow. But what that half hour turned out to be was really talking about in fact, the name of the post is Awareness and Infinite Awareness. And Kathy's asking, what time do I teach? It's 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific on Monday nights.
Yes.
So what we were looking at, and I am that last night, is that our what I'm going to call our human awareness, our human awareness appears to wake up in the morning, just like he says here, and it does wake up in the morning. Our human awareness wakes up in the morning and goes to bed at night, but that is subject-object awareness. And by subject-object awareness, I mean there's a me and a that. In other words, it's like a separation-based awareness that comes from the mind. The background of awareness... When we focus on the background of awareness, what Michael calls that is the doorway to infinite awareness. We focus on the background of our human subject-object awareness, the one that seems to wake up in the morning with us. And when we focus on the background of the subject-object awareness, we do notice that the qualities of awareness are different than the qualities of mind. For example, the mind judges, right? And awareness doesn't. It's just open and allowing. But that awareness that we are paying attention to in awareness watching awareness, that background of awareness, is not infinite awareness. It's the doorway to infinite awareness. And to me, this is a very important point. Because as you all know, it is so popular today to claim awakening. Like, I'm aware that I'm aware. And one thing I experience, and I'm assuming you all experience it too, is that the more I practice awareness watching awareness, it is true that during the day, the more I am resting in that background rather than being in the foreground of the mind. Right? There's a shift that is occurring. And I seem to be just watching things and allowing things and not attempting to control things or manipulate things, right? You could say that the personality is even taking on the qualities of the background of awareness. But what some people make the mistake of when this shift begins to occur is they think that they are awake. And so to me, it is very, very important to realize there is an infinite awareness that is constant. It doesn't wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night. It's constant. And that infinite awareness that is constant, it never ends. It doesn't go to sleep, right? This is what we're awakening to. So just be aware of that and continue to practice the awareness, watching awareness. And if you want more on that, then listen to my 30-minute I Am That teaching from last night. In fact, the next sentence I turn to, Michael says, if you turn your attention towards the background of awareness, eventually you will discover the background of awareness is continuous, right? Also, because we are in the habit of looking outward, it appears as though the background of awareness is limited. And again, he is saying that as we practice awareness, watching awareness, focusing on the background of our normal everyday awareness that does appear to wake up in the morning and does appear limited, eventually we will discover that awareness is infinite, eternal, awareness, love, bliss. And of course, he spends some time, this is chapter one, so he spends some time talking about the difference between thoughts and awareness. Because humans, again, not only are we used to looking out, but what we really look out at and through is thought. Right? Thought is what we are absorbed in. And so it is natural for most people, because of that habit of looking out, it is natural when we begin talking about awareness and watching awareness, somehow the thought is that it's still in thought. And watching for the right thoughts, the loving thoughts, the, you know, something, it's in thought. And so what he points out is that all thoughts, including what we would call right-minded thoughts, all thoughts come and go. Awareness is that which is constant, in our case, from the time we wake up in the morning till the time we go to bed. It is always, always there. And you may have noticed in yesterday's questions in lesson 234, some of those questions were designed to help you focus on what's constant. You know, whether I'm healthy or sick, the background of awareness is constant. Whether I'm happy or sad, the background of awareness is constant. Whether I feel all peaceful and spiritual now or like I just want to kill somebody, the background of awareness is constant. And it's a matter of learning to look for that which does not change. Look for that which is always here. And one of the games that I really used to play a lot in order to get myself kind of in tune with the background of awareness is that I called it checking. You may have heard, I used to check. As I felt differently or as I was having different experiences, I would check to find what was the same. Right? So, and I think I've probably told you all, even I got in such a strong habit of checking for that awareness, that consistency that is what I am, that even when I got thrown from that horse and I was in all of that pain and there was this thought that I might be paralyzed for life, the very first thing I did when all of that occurred was I checked, and the awareness was still the same. There was no change, no change. My whole life may have just changed if I had been paralyzed, right? Everything else changed. But that background of awareness is the same. And so that's what we're looking for. That's what we're tuning into. Yeah, here's the sentence where he says, technically, one can say that the true self is the infinite awareness And your background of awareness is the doorway to that infinite awareness. So when we're sitting in awareness, watching awareness meditation, we're sitting there, I like to think of leaning up against the doorway, leaning up against the door, and never knowing when that door is going to swing open and we're going to fall through to infinite awareness, right? We're just sitting there, resting, leaning up against the door, knowing that one day that door is going to swing open. Let's see, Kathy talked about some of this, and I don't feel to repeat what she talked about to the best of my ability. Of course, you know, he did point out that we know that our thoughts are not a part of our true nature because we had to learn them. We weren't born with the ability to think in our language, right? So it's something that we learned. And of course, what's really, really important, although it's inexplicable to me, is that somehow thought believes it's a real entity. Right? Thought believes it is a real self. And thought believes it is me. I'll get to that part, what I was going to say when I get to that part of the reading. So I'll just move forward for now. He also, of course, points out that living from thought instead of living from awareness is the cause of all human suffering. And then I love this part. He says, you could view thinking and memory as something like a computer program. Within that computer program is a virus. The virus is called the I thought. And he tells us that the I thought controls the program. It controls all thinking. It's interesting because this morning while taking a shower, I was listening to Awakening Together Radio, and Roger Castillo, I don't know if that's how you say his name. Roger Castillo was speaking. He was using this exact same example. He was using the exact same example of the I thought as a virus that has taken over the program. And this is what he was teaching to the people that were there listening to his thoughts on. And you don't have to believe this because you can watch this happen in your own mind. And I love it where he says, you know, basically, if you want to, what you can do is, you know, sit down and decide that there are going to be no thoughts for the next 2 hours. And then close your eyes. And he says, if you are in control, there will be no thoughts. But if this virus is in control, there will be thoughts, right? And we all, I mean, is anybody here that, I mean, I didn't even have to try it. Right? I didn't even have to try it. I knew the answer. Right? So we can see this virus for ourselves. We can be aware that our mind is using us. Our mind is ruling us. We've allowed it to be in control. And the purpose of this book is, of course, to delete that virus. But he does point out that when we attempt to delete the virus sends out many thoughts claiming that deleting the virus is not a good idea. The virus has many strategies to preserve the illusion that it is real. And you know, every one of those strategies, or at least many of those strategies, will start with the word I. I don't want to meditate this morning. I don't really want to let go of this desire because this is too important to me. I would rather do this than my course lesson. The problem is we think it's me. We think I don't want to do this. I would rather ... But that again is just the virus controlling the program. It's the I thought controlling us. It's not us. This is so important to get. There is just nothing more enlightening than realizing what you think are your desires are not your desires. What you think are your opinions are not your opinions, right? What you think are your judgments are not your judgments. That's not you. That's the virus. Using the word I. Of course, he goes on to say the ego is the cause of all disease, death, war, fear, anger, and violence. And that's a short list. Although many thousands of years have passed, I love this part because listen to how true this is. Although many thousands of years have passed, human beings have made almost no inward progress toward ending suffering, sorrow, war, fear, anger, violence, cheating, and lying. And although that's a little longer, that's still a short list. Thousands of years ago, humans had suffering, sorrow, war, fear, anger, violence, cheating, and lying. Now, today, currently, humans have suffering, sorrow, war, fear, anger, violence, cheating, and lying. In other words, humankind is stuck. What has kept humans in the same pool of inward, unsolved problems? The ego, the imposter self, the I thought, has kept humans in the same pool of inward, unsolved problems. And then, of course, he points out that these inward problems cannot be solved by looking outward, which, of course, is the way people always try to fix things, right? By looking outward, fixing something in the outside. Inward problems can only be solved by looking inward. He also points out that the ego knows that if attention is turned inward, the ego will be found to be a myth, an imposter, an illusion, a delusion, a dream. Therefore, due to the ego's fear of ending, the ego keeps attention directed outward. And this is why I do not want to meditate. Right? I mean, the ego is the I. Of course I don't want to meditate, right? Think about it, right? But that's not what I am. That's not the true self, right? And if you are practicing awareness, watching awareness, you already know that even with just a little bit of practice, you are already seeing the difference between your true self and the imposter self. When you go into awareness, watching awareness, and you really focus on awareness, you can see things like awareness has no judgment in it, right? Awareness has no fear in it. Awareness has no belief in it. And, of course, the thinking mind has all of that, right? So you can see the difference. You can also see that even though, and this is my experience is the mind does feel very, very close. Like when I go into awareness, watching awareness, the body actually appears at a distance, right? The sensations of the body, they are distant. The thinking is much closer, much closer. But even though the thinking is much closer, I can still see that awareness is observing thought. I can still see that awareness is constant, thought is coming and going. I can still see that I am awareness and the thought is a temporary object. Even with a little bit of practice, we start getting that clarity. And this is why awareness, watching awareness practice is so important. It's literally having that experience that is reminding you of who you really are. Michael says, all humans are slaves, and the imposter self is their master. Again, one of the movies I've not recommended yet, but you know, because it's violent, But I might one day recommend it anyway, because it's just one of the best movies I've ever seen about letting go of the ego. Is Revolver. Yeah, Kathy knew before I said it. Revolver. And maybe many of you have seen it. Maybe we can go ahead and watch it. Maybe we could make it a movie of the month, Jacqueline. Maybe we could do it that way. In fact, maybe we could watch it at the retreat. If you're up for it, maybe it could be October's. Or did we watch it at the retreat last year? I don't remember.
It was an option.
It was an option. Okay. Well, if it's gentle healing, it's not as optional.
That's right.
Not that I'm going to come in your house and control you, but, you know, it's highly recommended. But in that movie, it's really interesting to watch because Jake Green, the main character, believes he has a fear of elevators. And he spends his life avoiding elevators. He takes the stairs. Well, near the end of the movie, when he's letting go of the ego, he starts to walk by the elevator out of habit. And then he realizes that if he goes in the elevator, he'll be able to face the ego. So he goes in the elevator, and as the universe would have it, he gets stuck in the elevator between floors. And I don't remember the ego's exact words, but the ego says something like, "I'm scared. I'm very, very scared. It's tight in here." And, you know, up until this point, when the ego started talking like that, Jake Green believed it. You know, he'd start sweating. He'd start pulling on his collar. "I'm scared. It's tight in here." But this time he says, "I see you," right? Now he sees the ego as an object. He doesn't see the ego as him anymore. He can see the object using the I thought, telling him how to feel. Feel scared, right? But because he is not identified with the I thought, he doesn't feel scared. He remains calm and he just says, "I see you." So what this is saying is that most of us do not have the clarity that Jake Green demonstrates in the elevator. Most of us are slaves to the imposter self. And if the imposter self says, "I'm scared," we start feeling the feelings of fear, right? We're slaves to the virus. Yeah, we obey, as Kathy is saying. Michael goes on to say that exposing the strategies of that imposter self and how to put an end to those strategies, as well as how to bring an end to the imposter self, are the primary purposes of this book. He also goes on to say, just in case anybody is confused, that ending the ego does not end the body. That when the ego ends, the body will live out the natural course of its life. Also, really important to know, ending the body will not end the ego. Suicide is not a way out. That's important to know if you ever find yourself contemplating suicide. In fact, who is the I that wants to commit suicide? Right? Isn't that just the ego, again, twisting you around its little finger? Right? So there's no reason for ending the body, no matter what the experience is. The only thing that makes any sense is following the instructions to end the ego, or to at least, at the very least, disengage from the ego so that you aren't its slave anymore, so that you're like Jake Green in the elevator. At that point, he was disengaged. "I see you," right? Before he got out of the elevator, the ego actually ended for him. I think this is probably about the part, this is the part that Kathy read to us. She gave us such a passionate expression of this, but let me just read it again. "The background of awareness is the true self, and humans almost always ignore it. Your true self deserves your attention. When humans turn their attention away from thoughts, the body, the world, people, places, things, experiences, etc., and towards their awareness, eventually they will directly experience their true self." And last night in the I Am That teaching, which again you can listen to the audio, it's a short audio, only 30 minutes, I read a little bit of something that Bentinho recently wrote. He has written this since our interview. And in it, he talks about these experiences that he's had of going beyond subject-object awareness, beyond what he calls the I am presence, and into the infinite awareness. Now, he's very honest in his article that he did not have significant interest in that, that he was still interested in the world and outward experiences. And, of course, Bentinho was having all kinds of fun. He was, you know, rock climbing and doing all kinds of things. So even though he had these experiences, they were not something he focused on. But, of course, now he is ready to begin turning his attention in that direction again. But what's wonderful is he mentions that the way he came to have these experiences of infinite awareness was resting in awareness. Resting in awareness was the doorway that brought him to having glimpses of infinite awareness, right? I read some of that in last night's teaching. Because the ego is afraid of ending and controls all thinking, the ego directs thought in ways that will preserve its imaginary self. Again, this is important to remember when I don't want to meditate, right? I don't want to contemplate. I don't even want to forgive you, damn it, right? Who is that I? That's the ego preserving itself. I don't like her, right? I need to make sure this is done my way. We have to keep looking. Who is that I? He says, imagining that thinking or thought is you is a delusion. Thinking you are a body living in a world is a delusion. And it is thought that creates these delusions. He goes on to say, do not allow something you acquired, which is the I thought, to pretend to be yourself. Do not allow it. Do not tolerate it. I may have remembered the word tolerate on my own. Do not allow it. And then this part is really important, I think. I even teach this in True Discernment because I think this part is really important. He asks us to read chapter 1 very slowly 3 times before reading chapter 2. I think slow reading is the only way to read any spiritual material. If you are sitting down with the course lesson and reading it as fast as you can, you're missing something. I promise you. It should be read slowly. Same thing with my tips. If you're reading my tips very, very quickly, you are missing something. I promise you. All spiritual material should be read slowly and contemplatively. And while I'm saying this, let me speak to those of you who are teaching in the sanctuary. I recommend the same thing for teaching in the sanctuary. I know I've said this before, but I will say it again. What I sometimes hear in the sanctuary are things like this. Try this experiment. Set aside 2 hours when you have no other activities going on. Sit down in a place where you will not be disturbed. Shut your eyes. Make a decision that for the next 2 hours you will not allow a single thought to arise. If you are really in control of your thinking, then not even one thought will arise. If thinking controls you, then even though you have made the decision not to allow a single thought to arise, you will not be able to sit for 2 hours without a single thought arising. What a revelation this can be to discover that thought, something that you acquired, now controls you. I mean, what's happening there? I'd say probably almost nothing. Almost nothing. And the reason that I invited you to teach in the sanctuary was to awaken your own inner inspiration. Read slowly. Read a sentence 2 or 3 times. Pause. What does this mean to you? Share out loud what it means to you. I call it out loud contemplation, right? Share out loud. So let me just give you another example, all right? Try this experiment. Hear the pause? I love to pause when I'm reading. try this experiment. Set aside 2 hours when you have no other activities going on. Sit down in a place where you will not be disturbed. Shut your eyes. All right, so as I'm reading this, what I am realizing is I don't really take much time to be still. And I'm realizing as I read this that I need to take a little more time to be still. Now, I'm not sure I can take 2 hours. But, you know, Regina asked us to take 20 minutes. And I have to confess, I haven't been taking 20 minutes every day. So what I want to do is I want to start taking 20 minutes every day just to sit down. And you see how you start, you just start sharing like that. Right? And this is how you awaken your own inner inspiration. Read slowly. Read repetitively. And then I would add and contemplate it. What does this mean to you? What does this mean for you? Right? Now, here's what Michael says. This is important for Francine. I'll tell you why in a moment. Some of the reasons for reading slowly and repetitively are that people read spiritual books and various self-improvement books, sometimes hundreds of them, without any major change occurring in their lives. One of the reasons for this is that they are not familiar enough with the teachings for the teachings to have become tools they can use. I'm going to read that again. One of the reasons for reading slowly and repetitively is that without doing so, it is likely there will not be a major change in your life. The reason there will not be a major change in your life is because you have not become familiar enough with the teachings for them to be tools that you can use. In other words, the teachings have not really sunk in after a single reading. Now, the reason I said this is important for Francine, do you know why yet?
Something about the memory thing.
Yeah, it's the memory thing. She knows. Because last week, remember, you said that Michael Langford had said that without a good memory, you couldn't wake up. And it's really without a good memory, without the ability to remember the tools, you won't remember to use them. You'll just go on with your old habits. And it's not just a poor memory. I mean, I have a poor memory. I mean, Francine and I can argue about whose memory is worse. Really, we can't. Might be mine, right? I have a very poor memory.
Seems like a silly debate because neither of you can remember.
Yeah. But I read these teachings over and over and over again. I spend hours with them every morning. You know, so, and I put in my calendar. If you look in my calendar, it is, okay, I'll just thank you for pointing out that Kathy speaks. I put in my calendar time to meditate. It is scheduled into my day, right? So even with a poor memory, if you spend a lot of time with this material, you're going to remember to use the tools. And it's using the tools that awakens you, right? Remembering to meditate, remembering to practice the loving all method, right? This is what awakens you. Okay, Kathy, the mic is yours.
The reading slowly thing, I also feel is just such a simple suggestion from Michael that is can be used by any of us. I mean, that's like one simple thing truly that we can do for ourselves. That's not like, oh my God, another thing. I mean, it's an easy thing to do. And so to take that suggestion, I think can be really helpful. And in the beginning of the book, in the how to read this book, he says when humans are taught to read in school, they're taught to accumulate information and store it in memory in order to be able to pass a test. If this same approach to reading is used when reading an authentic spiritual teaching, the human will miss what is being conveyed. And I was just thinking to myself, it's so true, because I was reflecting on school, and you know, it was only important when I took, for instance, American history. I wasn't really interested in American history, but I knew I had to take that class, and I could memorize what was given from the teacher, you know, writing it on the board and copying it down, memorizing it and taking the test and then blowing that information off. It didn't mean anything to me. But with that kind of training, if that's how we're taught to read in school, that carries over into so many other things, where we simply, you know, like he says, can read spiritual book after spiritual book after spiritual book, and we just blow it off. And it's like, what's the point? I mean, what's the point? It's a total waste of time. It's like what the Course calls, you know, a tragic use of time. So the simple suggestion to simply read slowly, read repetitively, you know, go over it three times before you move on to the next section, I found it to be very helpful, and that's what I wanted to share. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kathy. And of course, he says by reading one chapter three times, there is a much better chance of the teachings becoming a usable tool that can actually transform one's life, right? So, yes, don't rush. Don't rush. Remember what you're here for, right? So that's my review. Now, before I dive into something new, which is sharing from Gina Lake again, is there anyone else who would like to share on the last week? All right. I'd actually like to go to the bathroom. So, Ken, can you...
Sounds like a good idea.
Can you either entertain them, sing a song, or put on a song? Which do you prefer?
I will put on a song. We'll
okay,
do another
short one, because I don't, you know, I only have to pee.
We'll have to vote whether you can go or not.
Okay.
I don't think I've been to the bathroom in this house. Where is it?
Right here.
Okay.
This is a Christmas song, Angels We Have Heard on High.
Angels we have heard on high, sweetly singing o'er the plains, and the mountains in reply, echoing their joyous strains.
You know, the funny thing is, of course, you all know that I went to the bathroom. That's no secret. So I was sitting on the toilet, and directly on the wall across from me, there's an angel. So I'm sitting there looking at that angel and listening to the song. It was actually kind of fun. So, speaking of angels, we're going to start reading from In the World But Not Of It by Gina Lake. And for those of you who have the book and like kind of following along with me, I'm going to begin today at the bottom of page 18. called Degrees of Identification. So, here we go. Complete belief and complete disbelief are not the only possibilities when it comes to your thoughts. There are shades of belief. You may believe a thought just a little, or you may believe a thought a lot. You may believe a thought for a second, or you may believe a thought for a lifetime. How strongly and for how long you believe a thought makes all the difference in how much that thought affects your experience of life and how much you suffer as a result of it. And again, just using Ken as an example, remember several weeks ago he talked about that bully thought, you know, and how he went back and saw that he had that bully thought when he was a kid, his older brothers were bullying him, but what was really underneath it was wuss, is that right? Wuss.
Well, my father's word was panty waste.
Panty waste.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, but he believed that since he was a little boy. And he previewed different things in life through that filter all the way up until a few weeks ago, right? And so that really caused a lot of suffering for him throughout his lifetime. So again, there are shades of belief. And the more that we believe a thought and the longer that we believe a thought, the more suffering the thought is going to create. And in fact, she goes on to say, so it's not so much the thoughts themselves that cause suffering. It's how deeply someone is identified with those thoughts and for how long. By identification, I mean how much time is spent involved with a thought. How deeply is it believed? And whether it is given voice to and acted on. And I don't know if you guys remember, but in The Untethered Soul, Michael Singer told us that the worst thing you can do is act on the ego. Do you remember that? Because when you act on the ego, it hardens, right? It's more firmly identified with.
Reinforced.
Reinforced. Thank you. That's a very good word. It is reinforced when you act on it. She says, there will always be some degree of identification when you're busy doing things and interacting with people. In other words, when you're not paying attention. All right? When you're not paying attention, there's going to be some degree of identification with your thoughts. But she says, this is not a problem if identification is very brief. But the longer you believe a thought, however, the more likely it will turn into a story. And then an emotion, and then more stories, and then more emotions. And what this reminds me of is that loop of experience, right? What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see, right? And it just keeps going round and round and round. I think this is her same way of talking about that same type of loop. And she says, then those emotions are acted on, often compulsively, destructively, or unwisely. And then, of course, you kind of have a problem, right? She says, here's an example to illustrate this. And I'm just going to kind of go over the example quickly. She says, if you have the thought, I'll never get another job I like. You know, maybe you were just not fired, laid off from a job. Maybe you were just laid off from a job. Maybe you put a lot of effort into applying for a particular job and didn't get it, right? So for whatever reason, when this experience happens, you made a decision, you had a thought, I'll never get another job I like. And she says, if you continue to have that thought, that story, if you continue to believe that story, then that could actually affect you so that you maybe quit trying to get jobs because you're never going to get a job that you like. Or the job you do get, you see it through that filter and you keep seeing all the things you don't like about the job because you've decided you'll never get another job that you like. As a result, again, what I think, I see what I see. I experience what I experience. I think the idea is reinforced through your experience, and you continue to think similar types of thoughts. Right? You're now identified with a thought like that. She also says this could lead to other habits like eating too much, you know, because you hate your job, so you come home and you pig out, which of course leads to, you know, gaining weight typically, which can lead to self-hatred, right? And you see how the whole thing just keeps ballooning, which unfortunately, this is how insane we are. Okay, I pig out too much, I gain weight, I hate myself, and then what do?
Pig out
again. Aren't we crazy? I always hate myself more.
Certified.
Let's hate myself more. She says these types of thoughts, feelings, and activities undermine any motivation that would put us back in the job market. She's still using this example, and make us an attractive employee. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. We begin to live the thoughts we identify with, right? It's like Michael said in his book, we are slaves to the virus, right? Slaves to the virus. The more beliefs you have that are uninvestigated and unconscious, the more identified with them you'll be, and the more they'll affect your emotional state, your behavior, and consequently, your life. People have uninvestigated thoughts because built into the thoughts is the sense that they are true. And this is really a part of the virus, a part of the virus program, is the sense that if I think it, it must be true. Right? That's a part of the program. She says people have uninvestigated thoughts because built into thoughts is the sense that they are true. So people automatically assume that what they think is true. But this kind of certainty and other strong convictions and opinions are not a sign of truth or inner strength, but a sign of a strong ego. The ego believes in its beliefs and opinions. This is one of the ways the false self is maintained. And this is reminding me of the Course when it talks about, would you rather be right or happy? You know, we think we are right about the fact that my thoughts are true, right? And that just keeps us identified with the ego. That just keeps us slaves to the I thought virus. Thinking that my thoughts are true. Being right about the fact that my thoughts are true. Right? If you weren't programmed to automatically believe your thoughts, you'd be able to see the truth about the thought stream and the ego much more easily. But life doesn't make it easy to see because human beings are programmed to believe their thoughts, even the thoughts that lead them astray and make them unhappy, like the thoughts that make us eat more and more and more as we hate ourselves for gaining weight, right?
Yeah, and the cycle we reinforce.
And then, absolutely. The suffering that comes from believing the thought stream eventually motivates people to question their thoughts. This is the advantage of suffering. Eventually, you know, what is it that the Course says something about? We can only tolerate so much pain or something like that. I don't know if anybody remembers that line exactly. But at some point we hit the threshold of suffering and we're willing to look for a better way. There's got to be a better way, right? And that's what she's saying here as well. The suffering that comes from believing the thought stream eventually motivates people to question their thoughts, and then they discover the truth about them. Life gives you an ego that delivers suffering, but it also gives you a way out of suffering. And she describes that as awareness and investigation. Here we go again with being aware of awareness, right? Awareness is one of the ways out of suffering, and investigating our thoughts, self-inquiry, is another way out of suffering. It's interesting how no matter what book I pick up and read, they keep telling us the same thing. Okay, again, she points out that the ego is just a bunch of thoughts, and those thoughts are meant to ensnare you, not reveal truth. So it's the false self, it's the virus. All right, the next section on page 21 is how to tell when you are ego-identified. It isn't that difficult to tell when you're identified with the ego. There are certain telltale signs. If you can recognize the ego in a thought before you identify with that thought, that's even better. However, as we've seen, many thoughts that appear quite neutral have the ego driving them and hiding in them, and those might still catch you up. Identifying with thoughts that have little ego in them is not much of a problem. Believing a thought that has a lot of ego in it is another story. Those types of thoughts, if not obvious to you, will be obvious to others and likely to trigger their own egos. And she's going to go into an example, but I want to make a comment here. My guess is that Michael Langford would not agree with what Gina Lake just said. She said, identifying with thoughts that have a little ego in them is not much of a problem. I think what she really means is there won't be significant suffering. Right?
There will still be suffering.
There will not be, it's not much of a problem, right? We don't want to hear that and think, okay, well then, you know, 50% of my thoughts are fairly benign. I'm okay with that 50%. Not anyway, not if our goal is to realize truth. We really do want to learn to disidentify from all thinking, and when we're in awareness, watching awareness meditation, ignore all thinking. In fact, in NTI, 1 Corinthians, which I don't think we've read yet, maybe we'll read that soon. NTI, 1 Corinthians is about becoming the empty shell, which of course is, you know, like awareness watching awareness, being empty of thought. And what it says is, of course, the I in this sentence is Holy Spirit, because, you know, it's Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, right? What it says is, I don't have the exact words, but something like, I am not asking you to decide which thoughts to listen to and which thoughts not to listen to. That would keep you busy for an eternity, right? I'm asking you to let go of all thought, right? And I think I know that would be Michael Langford's opinion as well. So what I'm reading here about some thoughts having a little ego in them and it's not much of a problem, I think the way we need to hear that is we're not going to suffer as badly. However, I want to say something else. My experience when I was living with Laurent was that, you know, I had certainly some thoughts that had a lot of ego in them, like I hate that lazy butt, right? And those thoughts caused me significant suffering. And then there were other thoughts that maybe had a little ego in them. And I don't know if I have an example. Like, I don't know. I wish he hadn't said that. Right? And I didn't feel that same hatred. You know, just kind of a quick little, I wish he hadn't said that. You know? But what I noticed was, if I didn't practice the same letting go on the little thoughts that I did on the big thoughts, because I learned to let go of those bigger thoughts. I learned to let go of, you know, I hate that lazy butt. I learned that caused me suffering to let it go. But what I learned is if I didn't let go of the little thoughts, the ones that weren't causing me much suffering, eventually it's like they added up. And I had this huge ego attack. Then one day, some little thought would happen, some little thing would happen. He left dirty dishes in the living room and, rah, you know, it all came out. So what I learned was that it was really prudent to practice letting go of all ego thinking, if I recognize it as ego thinking. It was really prudent to let go of all the little thoughts and the big thoughts. And I really found that as I learned to let go of the little thoughts that didn't cause me much suffering, there were also less and less of these big scenes. right?
Isn't that going with the we are far too tolerant?
We are far too tolerant of mind wandering, yes, absolutely. So, yeah, and do not allow yourself to be controlled by something that you acquired, right? Yeah. So although I love this book, and otherwise I wouldn't be reading from it, I guess this part I want you to take with a grain of salt. I don't want you to think that the little ego thoughts are okay, right? Okay. So now she goes in, and then she gives an example about a little ego thought that might not be a problem. For example, if there was something going on between you and your partner, right, and you know, maybe said to your partner, I think you should take a left, and your partner's like, no, I think it's to the right, and your partner goes right, and that turns out to be the wrong way, you know, saying something like, I was right about that, right? She calls that a little ego thought. Might not be much of a problem. I was right about that. The example she gives as a bigger ego thought is something like, you know, you really blew it. We're late, and it's all because of you. And you can feel the difference. I mean, if Kim was my partner, and I said to Kim, I was right about that. Well, you know, I was right. What might you do, maybe?
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, okay, not a big deal. Okay, if I say, you blew it. It's because of you we're late. Now what's going on in you?
Well, last week you blew it.
Yeah, see, now we're going to have a fight, right? So that's the point she's making, I think, that, you know, that the little ego thoughts are not much of a problem, right? Kim might just kind of ignore it, you know? But when I get big in my ego, it's going to create a big problem. So that's the point she's making. But again, I recommend letting go of all ego thoughts. If you recognize it as ego, don't say it. Why do you need to tell him that you were right?
Who
needs to tell him that you were right? To be honest, he's figured that out himself by now, right?
Yep. I didn't need you to tell me.
Didn't need to be told. Yeah, so I recommend letting go of all ego thoughts. Also talks about how the toning of your voice is something that needs to be watched, which we all know. Let me move on to the next thing. Now, she says, many have learned over the years to talk to themselves more kindly and objectively. And she said that keeps the negative ego in check. You can train the voice in your head to be more positive, neutral, and friendly by not listening to or identifying with it when it's negative and unkind. If you work with it, the voice in your head can become more benevolent. And I know this for a fact to be true because that has happened with me. But I love the next sentence. Okay, now she's back with me again. Here's what she says in the next sentence. But you don't need that benevolent voice either. You don't need that voice in your head at all. So here we're right back to where we don't need any of these I thoughts. Not even those nicer I thoughts. Now, that doesn't mean it's not worth it to train your mind to be nicer. I have found that there are great advantages to training your mind to be nicer to you. For example, your spiritual practice can improve if your mind isn't always telling you what a failure you are and you're never going to make it anyway, right? If your mind is saying, hey, you know, just trust this, just, you know, you're going to be more motivated to spiritual practice. So there is some benefit to a more benevolent mind. But a more benevolent mind is still not awake, right? It's still not truth realization. So it's helpful, but it's not really what we're aiming for here. She goes on to say, the most obvious sign that your ego identified is emotional reactivity and negative feelings, such as fear, anger, hurt, jealousy, envy, or hatred. Again, that's a short list. When such feelings arise, you become your ego, if only briefly. And what I have learned fairly well, to the point that I only slip on rare, rare, rare occasions, is that when I feel a negative emotion arising in me, shut up. don't say a thing. Don't do a thing. I mean, really, just shut up. That's what I've learned. Do not speak from this. Do not act from this. Don't do a thing. Just sit here, be quiet, and, you know, and also don't sit there and think it. It's not just the outward shutting up. It's kind of an inward shutting up, too. I'm not going to sit there and continue to think, well, why did he do that? He's such a jerk. He knew that, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm not going to sit there and think that. What I am going to do is shut up inwardly, too, and just be until this passes, until it leaves. And it always does because it's temporary, right? Do not act from the ego. And again, we all slip, but then we try again. And we just keep trying. It's kind of like I said to you all before. I'm going to say we never want to act from the ego. Because if I say sometimes we don't want to act from the ego, that's not really it, is it? So I'm going to say we never want to act from the ego. And yet, even as I say that, we all know we're going to make mistakes and we're going to forgive ourselves and we're going to continue to try. But we still have to say never. Because that's the goal. That's the bullseye. That's what we're aiming for. We're not aiming for sometimes, right? She says, the more that you engage in the thoughts that produce those feelings, and again, those feelings were feelings such as fear, anger, hurt, jealousy, envy, hatred. The more you engage in the thoughts that produce those feelings, the longer those feelings will last, and the more powerful a hold they'll have on you. She says the strength of your negative feelings is a measure of how strongly and possibly how long you've bought into a belief or story. You can tell by how bad you feel how identified you are with the ego. Remember what Michael Langford called the true self, right? It was infinite, eternal, awareness, love, bliss. So if you're feeling frustrated, what is that?
False.
False. It's ego. If you're feeling stressed, what is that?
False.
Ego. If you're feeling worried, what is that? If your feelings are hurt, what is that? Right? All this stuff is the ego. Because the true self is infinite, eternal, awareness, love, bliss. So if you're feeling anything but that, you are identified with the ego. And the worse you feel, the more identified you are. She says, again, the strength of your negative feelings is a measure of how strongly and possibly how long you've bought into a belief or story. Those feelings, in turn, convince you there's a reason to feel that way. She says, you feel that way because you believe your thoughts, not because your thoughts are true, but our feelings tend to convince us that our thoughts are true. When you feel guilty, what do you think?
I am guilty.
I am guilty. When you feel scared, what do you think?
I'm scared.
Oh, there's something to fear, right? So what happens is we believe a thought, the thought results in a feeling, but then we think the feeling is a statement that our thoughts are fact. And our thoughts are not fact. And the only reason we feel the feeling is because we believe the thought. Now, what's this? Can you speak to how to release the energetic charge or the voltage behind the egoic thought? There is great value in shutting up, but the charge behind the thought needs to be reckoned with. That's what I call rest accept, and trust. Just now I abbreviated that. I called it the inner shut up. Right? But rest, accept, and trust means, resting the mind means not giving attention to those thoughts or giving as little attention as possible, right? And as I've mentioned before, when there's a strong egoic charge, right, I was not able to just go into stillness. So what I would do is I would practice self-coaching. I would do things like this. Okay, just breathe. Just breathe. You know these thoughts are just the ego. You know you do not want to listen to the ego. Your purpose is to let go of the ego. This is an opportunity not to listen. This is an opportunity not to believe. If you cannot listen, not believe, the ego will be healed. You know you want the ego to be healed. You are willing for the ego to be healed. And I just keep talking to myself like that. Because when I'm giving my attention to those thoughts, guess what I'm not giving my attention to? Right?
Ego beliefs.
The ego beliefs. Yeah. So I call that active resting. I actively rested the mind at that point. Now I can actually just turn my attention away. But in the beginning, I couldn't. And then accepting is you accept how you feel. You don't try to end the charge. You allow it to be there until it naturally passes on. You remember the Tao Te Ching says, if you want to get rid of something, first you have to allow it to flourish. So you don't try to get rid of the feelings. You accept the feelings for as long as they're there. And then the trust part is trusting. That's all that needs to be done. This is healing right now. Because I'm resting and accepting, it is healing. That's the trust piece. So that's what I recommend. Okay, I see... Yeah, actively redirecting the attention. Exactly. I see there's a comment from Linda. Are we
able
to...
That's Whale.
Oh, that's Whale. Okay, so we're done then. We answered that comment. Okay, good. So let me go on to reading. Okay, so we know the most obvious sign that we're ego-identified is that we feel bad. And the more bad we feel, the more identified we are. And we also know that those feelings convince us that the ego is true. And that's incorrect, right? Again, we don't feel guilty because we are guilty. We feel guilty because we believe the thought that we are guilty. That's a big difference, right? She says, if, for example, you believe the thought, I am going to be homeless, you'll feel terrified. These feelings of terror convince you that becoming homeless must be a real possibility, without realizing you feel alarmed simply because you believe the thought, not because the thought is true. And then I love these next two sentences. Are you ready? The mind just makes things up. It doesn't have a crystal ball. Why do we think that what the mind is telling us about the future is true? I remember when I was going through a lot of fear during that time when I was being guided to leave my job and move and all that. It was a really scary time for me. And one friend of mine, actually he was an employee of mine, was aware of my fear. And he said this to me. I thought this was just the most important thing in the world for someone to say to me at that time. He said, Regina, you've had fantasies before, like vacations, like going to Hawaii or whatever, and they make you feel really good. And I said, yeah. He says, well, fear is just a negative fantasy. Think about that. Fear is just a negative fantasy. If you fantasize about going to Hawaii, you know, you're like, or wherever you want to go, whoo, you know, fantasize about going hiking among the wildflowers, wow, you feel good. Fantasize about being homeless. Fantasize about your husband leaving you, you know, maybe you don't feel so good. But the mind is just making things up. It doesn't have a crystal ball. It's really important to remember that.
Key word, fantasy.
Fantasy. Yeah, negative fantasy. Right? That was extremely helpful to me. Again, she points out again, she's kind of repetitive like Michael Singer is, but we need this repetition, right? She says, any thought that's entertained frequently will seem true because it will produce feelings that make it seem true.
By bullying.
Yes.
Was I bullied?
No.
I believed I was.
I know.
And I was in extreme pain.
I'm sorry.
Well, you didn't cause it, but it was real to me.
Yeah.
I was lost in it.
Yeah, what I think, I see. See means perceive. What I see, I experience. That's the feeling.
Yeah. And the longer I cycled in that, the more painful it became.
Yeah.
Hence the rest.
Yeah.
Can you rest the cycle?
Can you rest the cycle? Can you rest from the cycle? Absolutely. So if a thought is entertained often enough, she says, again, she already said that if a thought is entertained frequently, it will seem true because it will produce feelings that make it seem true. But I think I see what I see, I experience. Now listen to the next part. Furthermore, if a thought is entertained often enough, it will become habitual. And the resulting feelings will become habitual. That's when we're going around that loop over and over again. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. Over and over again. That's habitual, right? And then she gives the example, if you give angry thoughts your attention, you'll create a habit of thinking these types of thoughts, and you'll create a habit of feeling anger. And you will easily become triggered, and your anger will just pop out, right? We've probably all experienced something like that, whether it's jealousy, guilt, unworthiness, anger, hatred, annoyance, worry. We've all had some type of a habit, at least one, right? At least one. Again, repeating herself, thinking such thoughts becomes habitual, and then the feelings become habitual. And then, because it's become a habit, eliminating this pattern from the neural circuits will take concentrated effort, right? We talked about that in the beginning of gentle healing, how you create these deep grooves. I call them water slides. You just slip right down them, right? You slip right down the anger, or you slip right down the worry slide because it's your habit. And because you allowed it to become a habit, eliminating these patterns from the neural circuits will take concentrated, actually she says concerted effort. And that's a part of what we're doing in gentle healing. That's why we're practicing self-inquiry. That's part of this concerted effort, right? That's why we journal. If we're journaling, it's part of this concerted effort. This is why we practice rest, accept, and trust. It is part of this concerted effort. Yes, it's the rewiring of the brain. These habits have literally been carved into our brain. The good news is the brain is malleable. Those circuits, neural circuits can dry up, and newer, more helpful neural circuits can be carved in, like the one that makes me want to get up every day and go directly to contemplation and then to meditation. Right? That neural circuit wasn't always in this brain, right? But it's there now. That's a positive habit, right? And some of the negative habits I've had are completely dried up. They're 100% gone. So we can change. You know, that's the good news. We can change. She said, again, she's already told us, negative feelings are the most obvious sign that the ego is in play. She says, but you can also assume your ego identified whenever you feel contracted. Right? That, ugh. Right? That, ugh. You know, I would say that my experience with ego now is almost never negative feelings. When I experience the ego, when I believe an ego thought for a moment, what I feel is a contraction. And that contraction is the sign to me that I'm wrong. right? I'm wrong. I just believed a thought that I should not have believed, right? I made a mistake. And so again, I shut up, both inner and outer, right? I stop. I don't continue with that thought. I let it dry up before it forms in the mind. I let it go immediately. She says the opposite of contraction is feeling peace, ease, contentment, relaxation, gratitude, joy, a sense of being in the flow, or even a sense of being lost in what you're doing. You know, like when you when you're working on something and you're totally into your work and you look up and 4 hours have just passed, right? Even that is considered a part of the self. It's called being in the moment, being totally focused on what you're doing. She says these are signs, these are hallmarks of the divine self. This is when you are being your true self, is when you're feeling peace, ease, contentment, relaxation, gratitude, joy, a sense of being in the flow or being lost in what you are doing. These are hallmarks of the divine self. To the degree which you are ego-identified is the degree to which you lack these feelings of peace, ease, contentment, relaxation, gratitude, joy, being in the flow and being lost in what you are doing. Maybe lost in your thinking. That would be ego, right? But just being so into what you're doing, right? And so into the moment. She says you are always receiving feedback from your divine self. It tells you through that sense of contraction or through that sense of expansion. Through those negative feelings or through those positive feelings. Whether you are ego-identified in the moment or not. And in fact, that's one thing I learned to do, is the moment I felt bad or the moment I felt contraction, to look right now, what thought am I believing? The moment I feel it, the thought is currently there. So if someone, for example, wants to take over the website that I just spent hundreds of hours building, and I have no idea what this person's skills are or what the website's going to look like when they get done with it, and I'm thinking in that way, I'm going to feel a contraction, right? That sense of control. The minute I feel that contraction, I look. Oh, I'm wanting to control the website, right? It's there, right there, right there, right then. You know, all you have to do is learn to look really quick whenever you aren't feeling peace, ease, contentment, relaxation, gratitude, joy, a sense of being in the flow or being lost in what you're doing, right? As soon as you're feeling a contraction, as soon as you're feeling a negative feeling, look, what are you believing right now? This is your perfect opportunity to let it go, because maybe you haven't been believing it long yet. Maybe you haven't, remember she said there's shades of identification. Maybe you haven't identified with it deeply yet. And if you haven't, it's a whole lot easier to let go of. So learn to look the moment you feel that contraction or those negative feelings. She says the divine self is always communicating with the human self and doing what it can to bring the human self into alignment with it while simultaneously honoring your free will to choose to be ego-identified, right? In other words, if you want to feel like crap, you can. If you want to hate, you can. If you want to worry, you can. Right? If you want to be contracted, you can. If you want to be controlling, you can. But you're never going to feel good doing it. That's the divine self gift to you. You're never going to feel good doing it. The only way you can feel really good is to let go of the ego. Yeah, and then she says the same thing I just said. Once you realize that you're ego-identified, you can get curious about how you got caught up in ego. What thoughts are you thinking? What beliefs or self identities are you believing? Do you want to keep feeling this way? Right? She says, when you have enough awareness to stop and ask these questions, then you have a choice. You can go back into an ego identification. Yeah, I want to hate him. Right? Or you can become more present. And her way of recommending shifting into awareness is a way that I used to use. I don't use it so much anymore. I use it a lot in meditation. If you listen to my guided meditations, you may hear that one way I shift into awareness is I start paying attention to the body, right? Or what I'm hearing, or the sensations in the body. She recommends doing that anytime you notice your ego identified. Turn your attention to your senses. What are you hearing? What are you smelling? What sensations do you feel? And if you really do that, you can't continue to be caught up in ego, right? You can't turn your attention fully to your current sensual experience and keep thinking about how much you hate him or how scared you are this is going to happen. This is her method of being brought back into awareness, being brought back into presence. And she also says, the more familiar you become with presence, the more the voice in your head will lose its attraction. And that is absolutely true. One more thing that she talks about, which is important. I used to not think this was important until I found out that it was. There is a difference between happiness and the pleasure you get from indulging the ego. You know, like the pleasure I get, you know, talking about Ken behind his back, right? There's a difference between that pleasure and happiness. And she says, whenever you are an ego, you are eventually going to suffer. And so you need to learn the difference between that pleasure and genuine happiness. Genuine happiness is very, very clean and allows Ken to be exactly as he is. Therefore, there's nothing for me to say about him behind his back, right? So that's it. That's it for today. And we are ready to give our homework assignment. So over the next week, you're going to do workbook lessons 236 to 242. Of course, you will continue with your daily meditation. It could be awareness, watching awareness, loving consciousness, or the abandon release method. And as you know, I am requesting 20 to 40 minutes each day. And, of course, we're practicing the loving all method, right? And then your second homework assignment, you're going to read A Course in Miracles, Chapter 11, Section 5. The title of that is The Dynamics of the Ego. So that's our reading assignment. A Course in Miracles, Chapter 11, Section 5, The Dynamics of the Ego. And I think that's it. It looks like I finished a few minutes early.
Want another Josh song?
I was going to say, should we listen to another Josh song? That's exactly what I was thinking. It's like you read my mind. Let's do it. Even if it's a Christmas song, he's great.
I really like that.
Yeah. Here we go. Josh Groban.
No, 2007.
Thank you. Good night, everyone. Now, you guys know that Larry has no electricity.
Sire.